compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back at it. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. And that number to call to be on the air is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Emails can go to patrick@relevantradio.com. A real quick email that came in over the weekend. Just want to say thank you, Andrea, for writing to me. She says, you answered a follow-up question on your call with the rom-com caller. You may remember that call from last week. A lady was asking about to what extent is it, you know, good, bad, or indifferent to watch romantic comedies. And if you didn't hear the call, you'll be able to find it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. And so Andrea says, you answered my follow-up question with that caller regarding crime novels, which just yesterday I was considering picking up for some fiction reading between more edifying Catholic reading than I typically do, or more edifying Catholic reading that I typically do. When you commented, does it serve my goal? You voiced what I have been reflecting on, and I will also take it as a sign. Thank you. Well, thank you, Andrea. And just to expand on that for a moment, that question is one that I ask myself all the time. Does this serve my goal? Depending on the goal. Does this serve my goal to lose weight? If it's a second helping of Nancy's homemade lasagna, no, that doesn't serve my goal. Does this serve my goal to go to Mass, pray the rosary, something like that? These are sort of obvious. Well, sure, if my goal is to become more virtuous, to grow in holiness. So that's what she's referring to. And I found that to be a very helpful and clarifying little exercise, and perhaps you can try it too if you're not in the habit of doing so already. Just evaluate what it is you're considering, something you'll do or not do. Could you do this or could you do that? And then ask yourself that question, does doing this serve my goal, whatever your goal in question may be? And I've found, for what it's worth, that that has, as I say, a very clarifying effect on things. And it usually is very easy to decide, I'm not going to do that. That second helping of lasagna, that doesn't really serve my goal. And it becomes easier, at least in my own experience, to say, no, I'm not going to do that, or yes, I am going to do that, because it helps me keep my goal more clearly in mind. So try it. 888-914-9149. I also want to bring you up to speed on what's known colloquially, I guess, as the AI death calculator. Not sure if you've ever heard of this, but this is an article in the Metro. It's a UK publication. Danish researchers, that sounds funny, Danish, not only how long you will live, but also how rich you'll be. Yay. Now, I don't know if it measures how much treasure in heaven you have. That's where it's really at. But how long you'll live and how rich you'll be. Now, a number of copycat apps are appearing online that appear to be scams, while the original chatbot has not yet been released to the public. This came out in the news in recent weeks. I remember seeing it and thinking, you know, this using AI and the power of these algorithms, apparently it's frighteningly capable of predicting when people will die. Now, I'm sure it's still in its testing stages, but people are unnerved by it. So these copycat apps are appearing online. Now, this one that I mentioned to you a moment ago, the Life2Vec AI chatbot, that hasn't been released on the internet yet. It hasn't been released to the public yet. So you won't be able to do this. But other knockoffs are doing this. And so they're quick to point out these groups have nothing to do with us and our work. So be careful. They warn that the original software is private. It contains sensitive data. It's stored at a statistics warehouse in Denmark. So you can't access it yet, at least on the internet. And they say, we are aware of Life2Vec social media accounts, and there is at least one fraudulent website, that we are not affiliated with this or any other entities who claim to use our technology. They may be posing to steal data and other sensitive information about you, your email address, phone number, credit card. They could be used to spread malware. But here's what happened when they tested this Life2Vec. That's the name of it, whatever that means. They fed data from Danish health and demographic records for 6 million people between the ages of 35 and 65 into this model. Now, around half of these people's data that they put in there had already died, and they died between the years 2016 and 2020. But researchers found that this program could predict with 78% accuracy who would die and who would live. So, of course, the AI didn't know when these people died. It just gave them information, medical history, income, profession, things like that, life events. And it used this information to accurately predict. 78% is a pretty good percentage. And so now there's a concern that people may start, well, on the one hand, using these fake ones that may just be scammers. But I see problems, personally, if this does make it to market or it gets out there live on the internet where people can actually use it. I have no interest whatsoever in plugging in my details to find out what this AI thinks about my own life. I want to find out when God has it planned for me to leave the planet, whenever that may be. I hope it's a long time from now. That's my hope. We'll see. But would you want to know? Could you imagine if you plugged in your info and the AI bot said, yeah, you're going to live for another 18 months. And who knows if it's even correct? Think of how that would alter the way in which you live, relationships, work, things you do and don't do. I see a lot of potential problems with this. So that's out there right now. I thought I'd mention it to you just in case you get some come on from one of these organizations saying, hey, you can use the calculator. Just put in these details about yourself. That could easily be a scam. 888-914-9149. How about Barbie in Denver, Colorado? Good morning, Barbie.
Good morning. I just have a confession question for you.
Okay.
I've had a couple of instances now where I go to confession and I tell them my sins and then we chat or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the priest tells me to say my act of contrition after I leave the confessional, and instead of doing it and then getting your penance and then mm-hmm. your absolution, they tell me they give me my absolution and then send me out to do my act of mm-hmm. contrition. That seems backwards.
Yeah, the reason for the custom of saying your act of contrition before the priest gives you absolution is because it can suffice or does suffice as evidence that you're truly sorry for your sins. And that's one mm-hmm. of the things that's necessary, that the priest can discern that you're really sorry for your sins. I'm sure you know in John 20, beginning in verse 22, where Jesus says to the apostles, first he breathes on them and says, receive the Holy Spirit. He who sins you forgive are forgiven them, and he who sins you hold bound are held bound. So it's not common, but it does happen where a priest might refuse to give absolution because there's some evidence that the person who's going to confession isn't really sorry or has no intention of stopping the sin, which I guess would be the same thing. And so even though it's not a common thing, there are times when the priest in good conscience has to say, I can't grant you absolution for this reason. So the act of contrition fulfills that as a piece of evidence. If the person is saying the act of contrition, oh my God, I'm heartily sorry, etc., that in itself is sufficient for the priest to say, okay, well, I have moral certitude that the person's really sorry. So it's important for it to be said so the priest can hear it. It doesn't change or invalidate the sacrament, but it's for his benefit as well as yours to do mm-hmm. it within the context of the sacrament, which is the norm. Sometimes priests will freelance a little bit and do things differently than what the church asks of them. That's unfortunate, I guess, but it doesn't change the fact that you made a valid confession. That's my point.
Well, that's good. Because the first time he said, and they were two different priests, but the first one said, go out, I want you to make up your own act of contrition and say it sincerely after you leave here. Mm. And I thought, I'm not really good at making things up. But
and, you know, that's what's great about the church's formula prayers is that they're not just made up on the spot. They're the result of, in some cases, 2,000 years or at least well over 1,000 years of contemplation and reflection and experience and theological precision. So for us to make it up on the spot is almost always never going to be as precise or clear as a prayer like that would be. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, I'm glad to know that didn't affect anything, but I was just curious because it seemed different.
It is different, It's not the norm, and I have no way of knowing why some priests decide to freelance like that, but at least you can know for sure that it doesn't injure or change or negate anything that you were doing with the sacrament.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And it's a wonderful thing that you're going to confession. Would that all Catholics did that.
Indeed. Well, I hope you have a good Monday.
Yeah, you too, Barbie. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Gus now in Green, Ohio. Good morning, Gus.
Morning, Father.
Ah, well,
Patrick,
hey.
Sorry.
Yeah, Patrick, I'm not a priest. I am a dad, but I'm not a priest.
So I just heard you talking about the AI, when your death date.
How it can predict or it tries to predict when somebody will die, yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking about that with my mom the other day, and I said, you know, because then it might be a good thing because then you know when to go to confession, when to receive communion, and when to, you know, do all those things.
Yeah, I don't know about you. And how old are you, Gus?
I'm 12.
Awesome. It's a great time of life to be 12 years old. Good for you. Well, I personally would not want to come anywhere near something like that. I don't want to have any prediction made because I think it'd be very hard to have that hanging over your head and worrying and thinking about, oh no, maybe I only have X amount of time left. See, what we don't know is in God's providence how things can change in just a moment. Sometimes people die suddenly, you know, accidents or freak weather and things. I mean, so you're in Ohio, you know about the tornadoes that have been hitting the Ohio area in recent weeks. And sometimes, you know, somebody's in bed asleep. Next thing you know, he's dead because he got hit by a tornado and didn't even know it was coming. So life is funny that way, and that's why we should always be prepared. And I wonder, here's another thing, Gus. Imagine if the AI predicted, well, you're not going to die for another 72 years, let's say. Well, that could lead to another problem because you could have people who say, well, then I'm just going to live it up. I'm going to have a great old time. I'm going to do whatever I want because I'm going to live for another 72 years. And then when I get close to that time, then I will start being a good person, and then I'll go to confession, and then I'll start getting ready for my own death. And that's really foolish because death could come at any time. Is that kind of what you're talking about? How you could plan when you would go to confession?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't it seem like a bad idea to you?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. I just want to see what God's plan is for my life and let it unfold. And I have a feeling, because you're only 12, by the time you're 22, 32, 42, I know that sounds ancient, but believe me, it's not. But by the time you're 32 or 42 years old, this, what we're talking about now, will be probably so antique, so primitive compared to the way things will be technologically then. So who knows what's coming down the road? I don't know. But I just would rather wait for God to show me what will happen in my life. What do you think?
Yeah.
Your phone just cut out a little bit.
Oh, you're back. I said that.
No problem. So are you? Oh, go ahead, Gus.
It sounds good. Yeah. Just,
yeah. Yeah. It's that's the adventure of life, is to see how it unfolds and see all the different things that go into it and how you when you look for God's will in your life, you're going to find it. Sometimes his will is that you go through difficulties and pain sometimes, but it's always for a good purpose in the end. And I just don't want an AI algorithm telling me you only have this much time left, because it could be wrong. That's my take on it, Gus. Oh, so are you homeschooled or are you getting ready to go to school?
Yeah, I'm homeschooled.
Okay. What a great time of life to be 12 years old, homeschooled. You're probably done with your schoolwork by lunchtime, aren't you?
Yeah, around then.
That's a great. Of course, all the kids in the neighborhood are probably in regular school, so that gives you time to do all kinds of things. Well, good for you, Gus. I'm glad you called today. Thank you. Tell your mom that I said thank you for letting you call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Benedict in Albuquerque. Hi, Benedict.
Hello, Mr. Madrid.
Hello.
So I'm a senior at the Chesterton Academy here, and I was wondering if you had any advice for, well, young Catholics going off to college on keeping the faith when you don't have your family or anybody to really keep you accountable for it.
Yeah, that's a big challenge, that's for sure. So will you be going to a Catholic university or a secular university?
I will be going to a Catholic university.
That's good. Okay, well, so what I would recommend, and this isn't just for Catholic universities, but there is a good Catholic organization called Focus, and their website is focus.org, I believe. I'm going to check that. And they are, yeah, focus.org. They are it's an organization of good, faithful Catholic men and women who volunteer to do missionary work on college campuses all around the country. And I don't know how many campuses they're up to now. I mean, it could be 100 or more than that by now. And they have a community, their team of men and women who do this evangelization outreach on college campuses. So I would suggest that you find out if they have a Focus presence at the school that you're planning on going to. And then I would, when you got to campus, I would make sure that you touch base with them, get on their text messaging database, find out when they have Mass. They'll have all kinds of events, all kinds of things to help you stay plugged in with your faith and not drift away into the culture. And I've dealt with any number of Focus missionary groups at different universities around the country. I'm very impressed with their work and their formation and their commitment and their joy. There's just a lot of good going on wherever there's a Focus missionary team. So I think of all the bits of advice I could give you, that's probably at the top of the list. What do you think?
I think I've heard of them before, but didn't really know what they were. But I'll be sure to look them up and check them out.
Definitely do that, yeah. Focus.org. And if you go, I'm just looking at it right now. They've got, let's see, I'm just looking for where they would give you like a database of the schools that they're at. But their phone number's there. You can contact them by email. You can browse their places where they are. There's testimony videos, all kinds of good things there. They also have a big conference each year called Seek. And last year, I'm looking at this, they had 24,000 college-age young men and women at the event. Can you imagine 24,000? Pretty amazing. It's like a small town, small city. So check them out. They do good work. Now, obviously, I mean, the standard things apply. Go to Mass every Sunday, go to confession regularly. And if you need to go to confession more regularly, okay, do that. Stay plugged in with your faith. Surround yourself with like-minded people who love Jesus and are serious about being a follower of Jesus. Don't hang out with the wrong crowd. Don't get caught up in the snares that are common to college life. I think you know what I'm talking about. Don't look at pornography. Put good, strong filters on your phone or your laptop. You know, just take general, normal precautions, and you should be just fine. Stay in contact with your parents. Keep them up to date, how things are going. All of the above.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, and I'm happy for you. What a great time to be alive. I was talking to Gus a minute ago, 12 years old, but to be 18 again with your whole life in front of you, who cares what the AI says about lifespan? But it's a great time of life, and I'm happy for you, Benedict. And don't forget, maybe the Lord's calling you to the priesthood. So give that some thought. And if you ever want to talk about that option, give me a call. We'll talk about that too. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. I hope you'll join me this June for sponsor Christendom College's Summer Consortium. I'll serve as MC for the weekend, celebrating the legacy of St. John Paul II. Register at jp2weekend.com. That's JP, the number 2, weekend.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay. Hey, I'm looking forward to talking to you, and you can give me a call at 888-914-9149 and be on the air with your comment or question. Call that number now. It's sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. I want to get back to the phones here. Let's go to Patrick in Trenton. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so I just want to touch base with you about something. I called you about my son. He become Muslim recently, and like I think just a little over 2 weeks ago he had some initiation I was not even aware about. I know nothing about, but this is the strange thing is ever since he's become this Muslim, he's been vomiting. Like a couple weeks ago he was vomiting for like almost 3 days. He was in the ER. And he just had a birthday this weekend, and now he's, like, back to vomiting. He's in the ER again. Now, do you think that could have anything to do with, like, you know, oppression or like, do you think it's a coincidence? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
What a shame that he's done this. As a father, you must be heartbroken about this. It's just a terrible situation. I have no way of knowing. Is this a coincidence? Maybe, probably, I don't know. Could this be some sort of manifestation of his inner turmoil and a struggle that may be going on in his own heart and mind about turning his back on Jesus? Maybe, possible, I don't know. I'm not quick to ascribe supernatural or preternatural causes to things like this, but, you know, if it's not something he's ever had before, and suddenly now, immediately after this change in his belief system, this is now happening, I will say it's possible, but I really have no way of knowing. So the best thing to do is, you know, keep trying to get his attention, keep trying to get him to see that he's made a terrible mistake by renouncing his faith in Jesus as Lord and Savior, as God. And I would say give him the information from Robert Spencer, who is a prolific critic of Islam. He has a website called Jihad Watch. Did I talk to you about this before, Patrick?
I do have that book coming, and that's the one I'm going to give him, but it's kind of on the way. Yeah,
well, FYI, I mean, Robert Spencer may have written 30 books on the topic. It's not just one book, but it's good. If you've already picked us something out, that's good. The website is jihadwatch.org, and I would say be sure to share that with your son. And books like that, his Muslim friends will just be beside themselves with anger because they obviously don't want you to try to help your son come back. But if he's willing to read them, also I mentioned Father Boutros Zakaria. He has a website. It's fatherzakaria.org, I believe it is. I think he's Egyptian, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back and look at it. But he debates imams on the topic of Christianity and Islam. He has many videos. You can look him up on YouTube and share videos where he refutes their arguments very successfully. So that would be another resource. And maybe I've talked to you about that before as well. But, you know, Father Zakaria, I got his name backwards. It's Father Zakaria Boutros. Boutros means Peter in Arabic. And his website is FatherZakaria.net. Zakaria. I would share his videos. So I'm just looking now. I went to his website. He's got a video on answering Muslims' objections. He has testimony of converts from Islam to the Catholic faith. He's done some amazing work. To me, it's kind of amazing he's still alive, because you'd think that somebody like that would be tracked down and killed, God forbid. But he's going strong. He's an elderly man now, but he's done a lot of great work, and much of it in Arabic. He is Egyptian. I just looked it up. So check that out. I think that will help. And as far as the vomiting is concerned, I hope your son does feel better. But even more importantly, I hope he comes back to the practice of the true faith. Thanks, Patrick. Hang in there. Let's go to Craig. No, I'm sorry. We'll get to Craig in a minute. Jennifer in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning. I had a question about how to react to people who are involved maybe with New Age religions, and you'll try talking sometimes, and if I say anything a little negative, and bad energy, and they just don't want to talk to me, and I kind of feel like not realistic, because not everything's going to be not negative all the time, and so it's been hard for me, and I just was wondering if, because I know as a Catholic, suffering is purification, right? So we have to experience some things that are not always, you know, wonderful and rosy.
Right.
So I've had this problem a few times, and I don't really know how to respond. So if you could help me, I'd appreciate it.
So we're talking about just like sisters, brothers, cousins, aunts and uncles.
Yeah, family members. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens? You try to talk to them about what? About going back to mass, or?
No, it just can be topics that they just don't like, don't appreciate, don't think that are great topics.
For example?
Talking about people. Okay, well, I have a family member who likes Taylor Swift, for example, and I just don't feel comfortable with that, mm-hmm. with her liking.
And family member being like,
really,
like a sibling, cousin?
My daughter.
Okay,
my daughter.
All right. How old is she?
She just, she is 25.
Okay. So when you bring up, hey, I don't think you should listen to Taylor Swift because she does or says or whatever, and your daughter says, oh, that's bad energy, Mom, and she just turns you off.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and I just feel it's weird that I know a lot of people like Taylor Swift, but lately it just seems like, especially young women, they just get really weird. I mean, like, how do I explain? Like, just their eyes change. I don't know. Mm. Maybe I'm imagining it. I don't know. But it seems something not healthy, not normal. And so that's one example. And then there's just other examples of not being able to talk about normal things because, oh, no, bad energy. And so, and this daughter, I pray a lot for her, but I'm having issues with her going back to the church.
All right. Here are a couple of thoughts, Jennifer. Number one is, if she's 25, she's well past the point where you can say you've got to go to mass or you've got to do X, Y, or Z. Obviously, you don't have that kind of direct control anymore. And that's how things are. So I would live with that.
Yeah, I know.
And just maybe much like St. Monica, the mother of the wayward Augustine before he became St. Augustine, she was beside herself because her son, whom she raised as a good lad to love God and to be virtuous, he deviated from that when he was about 14. And he just went headlong into a life of sin and dissipation and immorality and so on. Now, I'm not suggesting your daughter's involved in that, but he certainly was. And his mother, much like you, was very frustrated. And so her technique, which really worked, was that she just prayed relentlessly for him. She got to the point where she gave up trying to talk him out of it. And she got good advice from her bishop, Bishop Ambrose of Milan. When she was telling him about her plight, he said, well, now, Monica, it's time for you to speak less to Augustine about God and more to God about Augustine. Or so the story goes. And so that's where she just became this relentless battering ram of prayer for her son. And as St. Augustine himself says in his confessions, when he, after his conversion, he was detailing his life, and he gives her all the credit, saying it was her prayers that brought me back to my senses. And without her prayers, I would not have had my conversion. Of course, it's all God's grace, ultimately. But it was through the intercession of his sainted mother. And it took a long time. And I know that's not a happy thing to hear, but maybe that's what will happen in this case if you just become a relentless battering ram of prayer for your daughter, that over time, your tears and your prayers will pay off. But I have a feeling that if you come across to her that you're nagging her or you're judging her, something like that, it could have the negative effect of pushing her further away, because she's apparently not ready to listen to anything yet. And in due time, life has its funny bumps and twists and turns and moments where God suddenly becomes more interesting again, especially in crisis. So that could happen. I would suggest that you just continue to have this relationship with her as best you can. You might point out how silly it is for her to say bad energy, because that's just a thought-stopping slogan. It doesn't mean anything. And you could ask her, well, if you went to the dentist for a checkup and the dentist started telling you that you have a cavity in your tooth that needs to be fixed or you'll lose your tooth, and would it make any sense to say, oh, bad energy, I don't want to hear that, bad energy? Of course not. That'd be ridiculous. The purpose for going to the dentist in the first place and having an exam is to find out if you have a problem with any of your teeth so you can fix the problem and not lose your teeth. Can I get an amen? So you see what I'm saying, Jennifer? You could just take that silly slogan and offer her some examples of how just saying bad energy is like sticking your head in the sand and being unwilling to deal with reality. And more often than not, you're going to get burned by that. You know, hey, it's, you know, tax day, April 15th, coming up next week. Oh, bad energy. I don't want to hear about that. Well, if you miss tax day and you owe taxes, well, you're going to suffer some consequences that will be unpleasant. And to say bad energy is kind of stupid, isn't it? So maybe if you open up a can of that with her, the next time she's tempted to say that, or the next time she says that, you can roll your eyes and say, oh, you're back to that again. That's so silly. Why not just deal with reality, you know, in your loving way? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know how you realized that she does think I nag her, but somehow you figured that out. So I need to try to control that, I guess, and not be a naggy mom, you know, nagging her. And pray to St. Monica, you said.
Yeah, the mother of St. Augustine. Get a copy of her. You know what I would do? Here's what I would do. Get a copy of St. Augustine's Confessions and read it.
Okay.
And you'll read all about his beloved mother, Monica, and what she did. It's really good. I think you'll find a lot of encouragement there, Jennifer. Thank you. Call me in, 2-3 months and let me know how it's going then. I'll be right back. This hour supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
If you want to be on the air, I'd love to talk to you. The number to call is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Jim in Chicago. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. So I've been in Catholic school all my life, but recently just kind of struggling with the idea of the devil. And I feel like the devil strips away a certain amount of free will, just in my recent instances, just like the idea. Yeah.
How old are you, by the way?
28.
Okay. Because when you said Catholic schools, I wondered if maybe you were like in Catholic college right now or something like that. So you're out of the school system, but you're reflecting on what you learned when you were in school?
Yep.
Okay. So may I ask one or two other questions? So when you talk about the devil kind of stripping away free will, could you give me an example, like maybe an experience that you've had where that seems, that's what's suggesting itself to you?
Yeah. So recently with friends and acquaintances, we've been kind of going over like, oh, there's so much bad in the world and so much evil and all these things. We need to like pray against the devil. And I just, sometimes I think that people do bad things because they don't know what's like what to do. So they choose the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is a choice. Like, it's not, were they influenced by the devil? I don't know. Maybe they just don't know what's right.
Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, can you give me an example, like something that you've seen or that you've experienced where you feel like, well, your free will is being stripped away? Or am I misunderstanding your question?
I think that it's more, does evil exist in the world solely because of the devil, and that is it, and we need to protect against his wicked ways?
Okay, that makes more sense now. So I would propose this to you. The first thing is that evil as such is now follow me on this, okay? It's sure. Not a thing unto itself. It's not like a substance the way. And substance in this context means the reality of the thing. So it actually exists, like you actually exist. You're a real being. This planet, this microphone I'm speaking into, these are real beings. Evil is not like that. Evil, it doesn't have existence unto itself. It's not an actual thing, but it is the absence of a good that should be there. And it can take two primary forms: moral evil, that's the result of human free will actions, lying, stealing, cheating, killing, etc. And then natural evil, which if you trace things all the way back to the Garden of Eden, you can see where this disruption in the natural order began and how as a result of Adam's free will choice against God, that caused a ripple effect that continues to this day. So physical evils like earthquakes or tsunamis or cancer or car accidents, things like that, they're not caused by human free will choices or angelic choices for that matter. It's another manifestation of where the order or the good that should be present is not present. So that's where we experience evil. So the issue, it sounds to me, is that when you're considering evil, look first to, if it's a moral evil, look first to the human agent whose free will choices caused that, or it could be a chain, like a cascading chain of bad human free will choices. I'm thinking of like the drug cartels and all this just cascading effect of terrible evil free will choices on the part of individual human beings, leading to death and destruction and addiction and just insanity. Those are caused by people's free will choices. And it is true that the devil wants to tempt you to do different things, but I'm sure you've experienced in your 28 years, you've experienced plenty of temptations, and you know that this is something you can either consent to or say no to. And sin begins when you say yes to something that you know is wrong. And that's why I'm emphasizing the idea of human free will choices. So you couldn't commit a sin if you didn't have free will, because you'd have no choice in the matter. You wouldn't be able to do anything right or wrong. You would just be doing things. You couldn't be guilty of a sin if you had no free will. So this is where, yes, the devil is there. He's trying to tempt you and all of us. So that's a given that the devil is always trying to do. He doesn't really have anything else to do. So all the fallen angels, however many billions or trillions of them there are, we don't know, but they have nothing to do. They're not doing appointed tasks like the good angels are that God has appointed to them. They have nothing to do except to keep an eye on us and try to bring us into sin, drag us down to hell. So since that's what they do, yes, you can always say with certitude that there must be at some level some kind of diabolical temptation, but not every human free will choice, every sin is the direct result of a diabolical temptation. Often, it's simply a matter of responding the wrong way to our own appetites. Your appetite for sexual pleasure, your appetite for food, your appetite for sleep, your appetite for alcoholic beverages, or whatever the appetites are. Most people have more or less the same appetites. And it doesn't take a devil hiding behind the tree there to get you to sin, because your own appetites, my own appetites, that can be sufficient to fall into sin. So maybe the way to think about this would be, first of all, to read a little bit about the problem of evil. And I'd like to recommend a book to you if you'd like, Jim, that I think will help you.
That'd be great.
Okay. So the author is Dr. Peter Kreeft, K-R-E-E-F-T, co-authored with Father Ron Ticelli, T-A-C-E-L-L-I. Yes, I know it should be pronounced Ticelli, but everybody says Ticelli, so he went with that. And the book is called Handbook of Catholic Apologetics. And among the many other wonderful resources that they give you in this book, including how to point out the complete, let's just say, the complete intellectual bankruptcy of atheism. There's a whole section on that. But they do have a whole section on the problem of evil. And it will take you into some good deep waters, and it will also give you ways that you can analyze situations and say, is this coming from me? Is this coming from the devil? I think you'll find it very helpful. I've enjoyed it for many years.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome. And by all means, this is a good topic to ponder and pray about. And but always know that you have free will, and ultimately, the devil won't go to hell for your sins. God forbid that you should go to hell, And your virtue or your sin is ultimately dependent upon your own free will choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that help? Am I getting to the heart of your question?
That definitely helps.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to talk about this, Jim. And I think you'll find that book very helpful. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Dan now. And Dan is where? In Las Vegas. Oh, that Dan. Hello, Dan. Welcome.
Good morning.
Yes.
So thank you for taking the call, as you always do. And I was reflecting on a podcast you had. It's been a while back. Do you remember talking about ecumenism? Do you remember saying that it's dialogue based on truth designed at a conversion?
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that.
And I like that. I like that you said that. And we've had many conversations, and we've, gone back and forth on things. And this is, in looking at that as a concept, dialogue, conversation, not hopefully not argument, but conversation where you're the sharing of thoughts. I was thinking about the two men on the way to Emmaus, how they were sad, and they thought Jesus had failed, and then Jesus joined them. And then he asked them why they were sad, and they told him. And he opened their understanding and showed them scripturally who he was. And when he got through and he disappeared, the two men looked at themselves and they said, "Didn't our hearts burn?" And you know, Pat, that's a conversation I'd like to have with you one day, is to be able to have that experience like they had. And I know you've offered me, different things to try to look at what you believe. You offered me traditions of men. I'd like to give you something at your convenience or your private time, if you ever wanted to do it. There's a program called Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R. It's kind of like it's a app on your phone, and we are the Apostolic Church of Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And we focus, our church focuses on what Paul focused on, Jesus Christ and Him crucified, which is the Godhead and the plan of salvation. And I can testify that you can get as good a version as that as any place in the world. Our pastor is such a good minister on those two subjects.
I hear what you're saying, Dan, and I appreciate that. It's kind of you to do that. One thing that I guess I never really mentioned is that over the course of now getting on toward about 40 years, not quite 40 years, I've been working in this part of the vineyard, and I've talked to countless Oneness Pentecostals and Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and Calvinists and Lutherans, and there is so much that I already have experienced in dialogue and sometimes even debate with people in these various groups, that although I do appreciate your kind invitation, I don't see how that would be, for me at least, how that would show me something new that I don't already have. I mean, you and I, we disagree on the nature of baptism. And what's the form of baptism? Trinitarian formula or Jesus-only formula? We've been down that road many times. We've talked a little bit, actually probably more than a little bit, about your belief in one God and not the Trinity, one God and three persons. We've gone round and round on that issue. And there are all the other assorted Protestant issues, you know, that would come into play. We talked about sola scriptura and other things like that. So I'm already, I guess, deeply versed, and I have that experience from all those many years of dialogue and discussion and debate too. And so rather than like go back over all the same things again, it sounds like maybe the best thing we could do, Dan, is if we can never find an agreement on these issues, then there's no point in really discussing them anymore or debating them, because we just keep going over the same ground endlessly without any real progress that I can see. Does that make sense, Dan? Do you see what I'm saying?
And I'm following you. The two people I think of in the Bible, Peter and Paul, you know, Paul being the major writer of the New Testament, he got a revelation on who Jesus was, and so did Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a revelation of intellect. I mean, they were intellectual people, if I can say it like I'm trying to say it. But God showed them. God showed them who. Paul dropped everything that he had, which he had quite a bit. He was on his way to the Sanhedrin in his life. And he was well learned. I mean, I don't know of anybody. You might be able to hang with him. I mean, you're very, very learned. I mean, and you have a command of the English language second to none. But Paul, when God, he said, Lord, who? Not what, but who art thou?
Yeah, I know these things, Dan. I don't want to come across as, you know, oh, come on, Dan. But you don't need to instruct me in these things. I do know them. And I agree with you that by direct revelation, what did Jesus say in Matthew 16, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for no mere man has revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. So I'm on the same page with you on issues like that. I just don't know where we go from here. You and I have been dialoguing for years, and you're a good guy. I like you, and I'm sure that we would have a great purpose-driven cup of coffee or a purpose-driven taco, but I just don't know where to go from here, because we've exhausted over and over again the same talking points, and I don't see how that's a good use of your time or mine, honestly, unless there's something new or different you wanted to talk about.
Well, that's the only thing that's important, according to Paul, is who Jesus is and how to be saved.
I agree. Dan, I agree, but every time I quote scripture and share with you the church fathers and things like that, it just kind of bounces off. So I don't know. I mean, what more could I possibly say after all the truth I've shared? And I know you feel the same way in reverse, but what's the payoff?
The payoff, well, would be truth. You know, I mean, Pilate
become Catholic
and said, "What is?" Well,
Become Catholic. In all things, I am apostolic.
Apostolic, tongue-talking, holy roller, born-again, heaven-bound believer.
I am a heaven-bound, born-again believer. I am as apostolic as they come because the Catholic Church is the Church of the Apostles. It's the church that Christ established. So I can't get any more apostolic than I already am.
Oh, well, okay. And that's, I know that's what you believe, and that's what I believe I am. I believe it comes, there's a revelation on who Jesus is. The Trinity does not have a revelation. It's got,
sure
it's got
it does.
Information.
No, the Trinity is divinely revealed, yes. Jesus, if you read the Gospels, Dan, Jesus at every turn refers to the Father. He refers also to the Spirit. He refers to himself. I mean, this is like Apologetics 101. You know that. The Bible is clear. There's only one God. The Father is called God. The Son is called God. The Holy Spirit is called God. They're not three gods. They're one God in three divine persons. Dan, it's always a pleasure. Honestly, it is, but maybe we should reevaluate whether or not these occasional discussions are bearing any fruit. I don't know. I'm open to whatever. I'm open to God's will, Dan. And I know you are too. Thank you. And I'll be right back.